Good morning. It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. Today is Thursday, December 5th, 2013. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. In January, a major earthquake shook up southeast Alaska, and it sent scientists scrambling as well, scrambling to study the fault where it happened before the seismic activity subsided. KCAW's Rachel Waldholtz reports.
Emily Rowland is a geophysicist with the U.S. Geological Survey based in Anchorage. In April, she and her team placed a dozen sensors on the ocean floor in a line starting just below Baranof Island and running south for 100 miles along southeast Alaska's Queen Charlotte Fairweather Fault. The goal was to record the aftershocks from January's magnitude 7.5 earthquake, and the sensors, called seismometers, picked up something interesting.
Whereas the land-based array recorded about 5 or so aftershocks, or magnitude 2.5 to 3, we have recorded a lot more earthquakes that are much smaller magnitude.
She means a lot more, about 500 earthquakes in the space of a month. These were small earthquakes, as small as magnitude 0.5. But even small earthquakes can tell researchers a lot. And right now, there are a lot of things scientists don't know about the Queen Charlotte Fairweather Fault System, which runs just off the coast of southeast Alaska and British Columbia. Rowland says the fault is similar to its southern, much more famous cousin, the San Andreas Fault in California. But unlike the San Andreas, the Queen Charlotte runs primarily offshore, underwater, and out of reach of sensors on land.
In terms of basic research and understanding how faults work, Southeast Alaska is a really exciting place to work because there's so many questions about the fault that we really don't understand.
Like where exactly earthquakes are happening and how deep they are. Rowland hopes the project will help researchers better map the fault system and better predict what kind of earthquakes we might see in Southeast, how big those quakes might be, and where they might hit the hardest. One of the biggest questions is what kind of movement happens on the fault. The Queen Charlotte is primarily a strike-slip fault, where two plates are sliding past each other, grinding their surfaces together.
I think of an earthquake as a quick failure or a quick slip that's happening on a fault surface, on between two surfaces of rock.
And somewhere, there's a crack in the rock.
But it's locked in place by kind of frictional forces. And shear stress, so some stress along that plane, eventually exceeds the strength of the rock and it breaks very quickly.
And that's an earthquake. But some parts of the Queen Charlotte system operate differently. They're so-called thrust faults.
In which there's actually kind of one fault that's kind of being thrust up and over another fault.
That kind of movement caused a magnitude 7.8 earthquake in October of 2012 near Haida Gwaii. Rowland wants to know if that kind of movement happens anywhere else in the system, in part because a thrust earthquake is more likely to cause a tsunami. To figure this out, Rowland and her team dropped the 12 seismometers down to the ocean floor. The instruments are sealed inside glass spheres, each about 2 feet wide, attached to an anchor, and dropped off the side of a ship.
We drop them. We really just drop them. We set them up. We tell them what we want them to do, and we drop them off the side of the ship, and they sink. And then they, over time, actually within a few hours of being deployed, they actually have a pretty interesting leveling device. And so the seismometer itself is kind of contained within a box that has some kind of viscous fluid in there. And so it has a little thing that unlocks itself and it levels itself and then it locks itself again. So they're sort of fancy in that regard.
The seismometers have to be recovered after a month. The batteries only last that long. And that's an adventure in and of itself.
And so we go over the instrument with a ship and we send some acoustic signals down to it that tell it to release code that tell it to release itself from the anchor. And the way that that works is it sends a little bit of voltage through a little filament that voltage then causes the filament to burn and disintegrate in the seafloor. And so when that disintegrates, a little hook raises itself and the instrument releases itself from the anchor and then it becomes buoyant and then it kind of slowly floats up to the sea surface.
But it's a complicated process and a lot can go wrong.
They're small things, you know, they're these little 2-foot spheres in a big ocean. And so it is always, everyone does a little thank you dance, I think, every time you find one floating in the water and you're able to recover it.
Rowland's team recovered 7 of the 12. Another 3 have been found by people around Southeast and 2 are still out there. The project depended on the cooperation of the Coast Guard, which volunteered ship time.
Of all of the ships, I've spent a good little bit of time working on large ships doing this type of work. And of all of the crews I've worked with, I think that the Coast Guard deck crews, I think they were the best.
The Sitka-based Coast Guard cutter Maple helped deploy the instruments, while the Cordova-based Sycamore retrieved them. Roland is now analyzing the data, and she hopes there will be plenty of earth-shaking discoveries to come. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Rachel Waldholz.
The footwear brand Extra Tough is on a mission to prove its disappointed customers that the iconic boots are not just sort of tough anymore. 2 years ago, parent company Honeywell transferred production of Extra Tough from Rock Island, Illinois, to a factory in China. And the product that rolled off the line was nowhere near what Alaskans had come to expect. Extra Tough says the quality is back to normal, and they want to replace any pairs purchased that didn't hold up. No questions asked. KDLG's Dave Bendinger has more.
At the Extra Tough's booth at the recent Pacific Marine Expo in Seattle, one needed not wait long to hear from disgruntled customers who'd bought some of the first non-made in the USA boots.
It wasn't what I expected. The laminating on the front toe would go come undone, and, you know, the Extra Tough would leak. And you try to do your best. You go put goop on it. You know, you try to go burn it and melt it back together.
Longtime wearers and newcomers to the brand were shocked when the waterproof boots gave way in months, even weeks. Some said rumor alone was enough for them to give up on Extra Toughs.
I needed boots down here, and I didn't buy them because I knew they were crappy. Everyone said that they were falling apart, so I just didn't buy the boots.
It's said that a third of all Extra Toughs end up in the state of Alaska. Many fishermen favor them for their easy traction on nets and lines, but little customers say they'd come to expect years of use out of a pair of Extra Toughs, not just one season or less.
You know, 2 to 3 years is what they used to last, you know? I mean, we wear them out, just rip them apart, but last few years, they just were, you know, 2 months, maybe a month, maybe. They just broke, ripped apart.
Honeywell felt the heat as disappointed consumers railed away online and to their local retailers. Even Senator Mark Begich fired off a letter to the company decrying the poor quality, expressing his hope that the production would come back to the U.S. According to Honeywell, that's not going to happen, but they do say that the problems have now been fixed, the quality is back. And as Global Director of Footwear Sean O'Brien says, they're going to great lengths to prove it to their customers.
If you had a pair of boots that had any kind of leaking or any the lining might have had any issues or anything, we'll replace them, no questions asked, full refund, swap them out. And I think that's the best thing we can do because we guarantee our product.
O'Brien and a few Extra Toughs reps delivered their product guarantee message over and again at the expo, lubricating it with a posh Drinks on Us reception and giving away what seemed hundreds of new pairs of boots and shoes.
We have incredibly loyal customers. People are passionate about the brand. We want to make sure that they're well taken care of. And that's why that's why we're here, is to make sure that we're out front and talking to people. And if anyone's having problems, we have no problem talking to them and making sure that they're happy and swapping out their boots, whatever we need to do.
Some speculate that what went wrong with the first year of Chinese-made Extra Toughs had to do with cheap glue. Others say that the 25 sets of hands that handle each boot on the line had not been trained properly. O'Brien toes a careful company line, going only so far as to say that making boots is not an exact science and that, indeed, there were some hiccups.
Just through trial and error and building out and getting a new line up to speed, we ran into some problems as far as some issues with some of our boots. But as of right now, and after the past 9 months, we've had no issues with any of our products. Everything has been performing even above expectations, and it's really come to fruition at this show. You know, the consumers and accounts and retailers, according to us, like, they're fixed. They're great.
Many at the Pacific Marine Expo took home free boots. Most adhered to the old adage of not looking a gift boot in the toe. Most also seem satisfied with the company's efforts to win them back.
Now that they're willing to go fix their mistake, I'm willing to give them a second chance.
They want to take the boots back and then keep up the reputation of having the highest customer service as well as the highest quality product. So I think it's great marketing on their part, and then it's good for fishermen because most of us aren't made of money because we're fishermen.
We just got a free pair now, so it's just with any small business. I totally understand. They take care of you, and you got to take care of them, I guess, you know. Just can't give up.
Time or another fishing season will tell if the boots are sort of or extra tough now, or somewhere in between, perhaps. One more note, in Begich's letter to Honeywell, he casually added that people want the Extra Tough beer koozie back, and that, Honeywell says, they can do. One rep said to look for them back on store shelves by early next year. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
Timber industry and environmental groups will make a stab at collaboration to boost both logging and habitat restoration in the Olympic National Forest. It's a move that could set a precedent for other regions, including Southeast Alaska. Tom Bonsi, correspondent for the Northwest News Network, reports from Olympia.
The Olympic National Forest was ground zero for some of the hottest conflicts of the timber wars of the 1990s. Periodically, local environmental groups still file lawsuits. Current timber harvest rates are a fraction of historic levels. Now the office of Congressman Derek Kilmer has convinced sometimes antagonistic groups to focus on areas where they can agree.
There's a certain amount of activity we can do on public lands that, up to a certain point, maximize harvest without negatively impacting the environment. And right now, there is a gap between what we're doing now and what's best for the forest and best for communities.
Kilmer's office released a long list of participating associations, timber companies, and environmental groups. Other national forests to host collaboratives have found success by focusing on carefully designed forest thinning projects. However, green activists said this announcement will not stop their separate controversial push for more wilderness set-asides, known as the Wild Olympics campaign. I'm Tom Bonsi in Olympia.
And that's all for Raven News for this morning. It's 8 a.m. This is KCAW Sitka. Coming up at 8:18, I'll have a live interview with the Nutcracker folks, so stay tuned for that if you can. It's 28 degrees in downtown Sitka, and the clouds are moving in. It's supposed to become sunny later today with highs around 37 and northeast winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. Should be mostly clear tonight with lows around 27 and northeast winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. And you can expect increasing clouds tomorrow with highs around 35 and southeast winds 5 miles per hour. We're going to rejoin National Public Radio. I'll be back with you shortly.